No She Didn't is a new podcast produced by a husband and wife team. They focus on the forensic psychology aspect of true crime and criminal investigations. Each week a new podcast will be released on Fridays discussing a true crime case and how forensic psychology played a role in the investigation.
Hey friends, it's Alicia from the No She Didn't podcast. I am bringing you a bonus episode this week. I'm sorry to say that my favorite sidekick is not with me today. He is actually in class homeschooling our boys, so I get to do this podcast by myself. So I've received several questions related to forensic psychology and how it's important to criminal investigations. So I wanted to actually go over one of those today and kind of give you some information, some education on how we as forensic psychologists, what are important to us, what are important aspects of, you know, the brain and things like that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. So we know that the physical characteristics of criminals, it varies widely. You have different shapes and sizes, age, etc. But the mind of murderers is actually quite similar. So I'm going to tell you a few of the biological characteristics of what makes a murderer. So since, you know, the podcast is focused on the forensic psychology aspect of the crime, we want you to become familiar with the terminology that we might use in some of our future episodes. So, first of all, we know that the brain is the key. It is the key component for us. It helps us to do the analysis. It helps us to regulate emotions. It helps us to do all kinds of things. So while we have the brain, there's actually other parts of the brain that are responsible for controlling our emotions, processing our memory, all kinds of things, you know, problem solving, things such as that. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about the brain. So there's a whole lot of mysteries that do lie within it for sure. So some really cool facts. The human brain weighs 3 pounds. So your brain is about 60% fat, and it is the fattiest organ in the body. The brain vessels in the brain are almost 100,000 miles in length. Yes, you heard that correctly, 100,000 miles. Your brain actually has enough electricity in it to power a light bulb. Men tend to have bigger brains than women. Don't shoot the messenger, it's the truth. But the areas responsible for problem solving and emotional regulation, which is known as the frontal lobe or the limbic cortex, that is larger in women than men. So women have a larger area in the limbic cortex responsible for problem solving and emotional regulation. Now men, this is where the part comes in that's really important. In men, the parietal cortex and the amygdala are responsible for the processing of memory and emotional responses in men. And those pieces, the parietal cortex and the amygdala, are larger in men. Now, the amygdala, it's an almond-shaped set of neurons, and it's located deep in the medial temporal lobe. And you'll hear me refer to amygdala quite often, so I wanted you to know what that was. So, the statement that I just made to you defining what some of the pieces of the brain are, it'll help you to understand why more crimes are committed by men than by women. So, according to the Federal Bureau of Prisons report that was released in just August, well, just earlier this month of 2020, 6.8% of inmates are female, while 93.2% are men. So, let's talk a while about why it's, you know, such a difference. You know, what is the biological reasoning behind this? So, just a moment ago, I mentioned the part of the brain called the amygdala. The amygdala is bigger in men than females, but this portion of the brain is actually involved in fear, aggression, and social interactions. Now, keep in mind, it's not just the size of the amygdala, but the volume of the amygdala that's important. Studies have been conducted by the University of Alabama and their neurology team, and they found that men that have less volume in the amygdala were actually 3 times more likely to be aggressive, violent, and to show psychopathic traits. So another key biological component is the anterior cingulate cortex, or the ACC. Now, this part of the brain is responsible for behavior regulation and impulsivity. And research has shown that the lower the ACC, the more that person is prone to commit crimes. So we've done several studies, and we basically want to know, how do we stop crimes from happening? So what we've done is we've started doing testing on children. And I know that sounds scary, but it's not scary. And I'm going to tell you about one such research that was done by the University of Pennsylvania. They took 1,800 different, you know, children, 3-year-old children, came male, female, different, you know, culture backgrounds, things like that. And they brought them all in. So there were 1,800 3-year-old children. Does that not sound like the worst nightmare? Maybe if you love 3-year-olds, you're good. But me, I'd be like, ah. So electrodes were actually placed on the children's fingers. And what they were doing was they were going to play 2 separate tones for the children. So one of the tones was followed by a loud, unpleasant sound, while the other was played alone. Now, the point of the study was to understand fear conditioning in children. So what they would do is they would play the tone and they would record the children's heart rates and things like that. You know, even their sweat, perspiration, you know, were they scared? Were they nervous? You know, anticipating the sound of that loud tone, or were they calm? And so 20 years later, the researchers went back and they were able to identify participants that later went on to commit crimes. What they found was that there is a link in this case. And the link is that the children that showed no fear responses in the study 20 years ago are actually the ones that went on to commit crimes. Now, I'm not saying all of them did, but a large majority of them did. So it led the researchers to believe that even as early as 3 years old, we can start to monitor children and their brain activity and their brain functioning to see if we can prevent crimes. So in that situation where most of us would have been fearful of the sound with the loud, unpleasant tone, the children that did not respond were fearless. So what we want to do is, you know, like I said just a second ago, what is one way to prevent future crime? The easiest answer that I know to give you is intervention at an early age. So we know that we have our biology, but it's not our destiny. So if we do show at 3 years of age that we might have a higher tendency to commit crimes, that doesn't necessarily mean that we are going to do it. We're not, you know, destined to become a criminal. What we have to do is we have to begin to look at how we are educating that child. Are we teaching that child the skills that are needed to deal with angry emotions and things like that? Are we working with parents to help them to recognize certain things going on in the child's behavior that could be a, you know, warning for something that would happen later on in life? You know, what are the triggers that occur within the child that cause them to act out? So there's several different things that we can do. And so some of the other biological factors that do contribute to criminal behavior is often simply, you know, an easily controlled poor diet. So I know nobody wants to discuss diet. I don't myself. I love to eat. And when I have gone on diets and things in the past, I know that I've become cranky and moody and my family did not like me. So they tried to force me to eat chocolate. So, which I probably didn't pass up. You know, how does your diet affect you turning into a criminal? Well, this is how. Vitamin deficiencies, poor nutrition. The brain needs vitamins and minerals to function properly. So we know that in most of our foods nowadays, there's food additives, and even a lot of people have allergies and to certain, you know, foods and additives in the foods. And they can actually change a normal mind into a criminal mind. If we know that some children are more prone to hyperactivity if we give them chocolate, then we know not to give them chocolate or to limit the amount they consume. It's just as simple as understanding physical constraints as it is to understand biological and psychological restraints. So I want to tell you about a murder trial and how the defense team used Twinkies as the defense of a man that murdered two men. So you can actually read about it a little bit further if you want to, but all you have to type in is Twinkie defense and you'll get all kinds of information. But yes, you actually did hear me correctly. I did say Twinkie defense. So who doesn't love Twinkies? I know I do. So if you remember, not too long ago, there was a mass frenzy of people going to the store to buy all the Twinkies off the shelf because it was rumored that they were no longer going to be made. Well, we all know that Twinkies are still here and they're still yummy. And so we don't know if that was a psychological ploy, you know, to go ahead and increase their amount of sales, or if one, you know, the company was going to go bankrupt. We don't really know the facts behind it. So, but we can, you know, kind of assume that maybe it was a ploy for sales to be increased, but whatever. So let's go back to our case. But, you know, Twinkies as a defense, who could ever imagine that they would hear that in court? So, it certainly isn't a recognized legal defense, but it did work during the murder trial of Dan White in 1979. Dan actually killed two people because he was on a sugar high, supposedly, and he was unable to think rationally. So, one might ask, how many Twinkies do you have to eat before you go into a fit of rage and kill two people? Well, I have been able to determine what that number of Twinkies is. So, but anyway, Dan was actually a former San Francisco police officer. He was also a firefighter and a city district supervisor. Dan actually killed the mayor of his town, George Moscone, and another supervisor named Harvey Milk. So, during the trial, the defense stated that White was suffering from diminished capacity because he was suffering from depression, because he had actually changed his diet from healthy foods to Twinkies and other sugary foods. While certainly the defense team was not saying that Twinkies were to blame for the murder, White's consumption was symptomatic of his underlying depression. So we know that White had actually quit his job the day before the murders. He used to be an avid gym person, but he had stopped working out at the gym. He started coming to work unclean and unkempt. His personal hygiene was a mess. He was said to have been seen consuming large amounts of sweets and drinking lots of Cokes, which were not his norm. So people were very concerned about him. So during the trial, there were two psychiatrists that actually testified on White's behalf. During the trial, they stated that his diminished capacity caused him to explode at the time of the killings. They also stated that his diet could have actually worsened an already present problem with mood swings. So the jury went on to find White to be incapable of making decisions and that his diminished capacity did not allow him to premeditate the murder, which is actually required to charge someone with murder. It has to be premeditated. So the jury actually wound up finding him guilty of voluntary manslaughter. So there were actually quite a few riots and people upset about, you know, this decision. And it became a huge issue in the legal system. So diminished capacity was actually, as a defense, it was abolished in 1982. So, and probably with really good cause, because I can only imagine the amount of criminals that would use Twinkies as their defense for why they did horrible things. But anyway, so the moral of the story is just to take good care of your bodies and make sure you're taking your vitamins and you're eating as healthy as you can, because your brain really does depend on it. It needs it. So until next time, have a great day, friends, and we look forward to our next podcast with you.